Hi, everyone. This is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program, In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, May 6, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How's everybody today?
Oh, we'd be fine.
Doing well and wonderful.
All right, I'm fine too. We will open today's show with an excerpt from February 12, 2006. Quo says, "Everyone at all times is receiving the love and the light of the one infinite creator and is transducing it to a certain extent as it moves through the energy system of the chakras. If you, as a crystal being, have come to a point within your incarnation where you are relatively restful and content within yourself, then you are probably allowing a good deal of the light of the one infinite creator to pour through your system undistorted. Discontent and worry is the one perturbation that will most effectively destroy the energy of light. Consequently, as you work to be more and more comfortable within your own skin, you are not being selfish. You are not taking too much time for yourself. You are, rather, working in service to the Creator and to others by clearing your own energy system. It is not selfish to do this work, but rather of service to others."
Thank you, Gary. We are all crystal beings. That means who we are in many ways is created by us even before we were born into this incarnation by the many incarnations which we have experienced up until now. We bring that bias that we have on a subtle basis taken to ourselves as the points of the crystal. And yet there are many other points to this crystal, many ways in which we can connect with ourselves in a more and more clear way, in a more and more we're looking to find ourselves, basically, when we're looking to find the Creator. Because in the end, we all are the Creator, but we come to it in different ways. So we're looking for a way that is in a comfortable alliance with that which has gone before in us, that which we have brought into this incarnation as inborn biases. And we're hoping to connect more and more fully and to clear away confusion from our inner workings so that we may rest in our own crystal being. and ultimately in a state of worship. That or rest or comfort or unification with the one creator. Many times in the past I have been accused by someone of not working enough in these days, these latter days of my life, new ways of looking at the Creator. I don't seem to be as hungry as many. And it's true. I'm not. I think we're hungry until we hit that one precious, absolutely riveting moment when we know that our life has changed for the better. And it thrills us and exalts us so that we are not going to look further because we have just been completely clarified within our own nature and have no more interest in ways of looking at the Creator. We have a way of looking at the Creator that so fulfills us that the thought of something thrilling us more is faintly laughable. Now, that doesn't mean that a person who is contented isn't interested, isn't intellectually just as able as anyone else to examine a new way of thinking, if there is one that we haven't looked at before. And it delights us when we find something we haven't looked at before. We look at it, we taste it, we roll it around in our heads and in our hearts. And if it's for us, we take it. But there are varying degrees of being thrilled. There are varying extents to which the new information clarifies us. And one day we discover that we feel completely clarified, that our way to the Creator has been unbelievably, incredibly, we will no longer have to do what often fulfills the life of a young seeker or any seeker who has just awakened to all the possibilities of a life lived outside of the box of one who dies not to live again. We who have that awareness that we are citizens not of a lifetime but of an eternity are very excited, I think, when we first wake up to this information. We have never conceived of ourselves as crystal beings. We have conceived of ourselves as making the rent, you know, paying the bills, fulfilling our obligations to be general about it, doing what we like with the rest of our time, and in the eyes of our own self, being a good guy. All of a sudden, we wake up to there's more. There's more. Oh, my goodness, this is incredible. And we study and search and seek. And we find things that are in varying ways awakening to us. And we're more or less riveted by them. You will know, my friends, when this moment comes to you. I knew when it came to me, even though I was very young. I couldn't have been more than 4 because I didn't go to my magic kingdom, so-called, by myself when I was a toddler. and I went there. And the one that I perceived as Jesus would hold my hand and look into my eyes and give me that experience that I conceived of then and now as changing my life forever. And then and there, as a little four-year-old, with my full heart and full intent, I offered myself to the love in those eyes. And I said, I want to follow the love in your eyes, and I will follow it every day of my life, beloved. And that is all I have ever needed, and I don't think I will ever need more. Others are not so lucky. They do not have direct experiences like that. They come to awareness of eternity too old. That is, being older than four. And so they seek. And I have extraordinary sympathy for all seekers and want to be there for them. And one of the ways that we are with them is right now, and I rejoice. And I hope that you continue to seek with unabated joy in the seeking until you are fully and completely satisfied. And then I hope that you will sit within your comfort, your contentment, your absolute joy, and allow the love and the light of the one infinite creator to be transduced by your chakra system and that light to the world. Happy seeking, everyone. I pray you will be satisfied one day.
Thank you so much, Carla. We shall move on to our first question. It comes from Isis via Bringforth. And in characteristic short fashion, Isis asks, all is one in potential, ? Or all is one, period, or both, or what?
The answer is both, I think. All is one, period. That's in sixth density. We are still in potentiation in third density, being able to see that all is one. We're sitting here in making the choice. This is the density of choice. We still have to go through the density of love and the density of light before we hit sixth density, the density of unity. So all is one in sixth density, all is one in potential in third density, and all is one as we are able to see it. Absolutely. Everybody else, have at it.
You're right. It's basically both, but especially here in third density, we have to realize that it is mostly in potential. We can probably reach a state in meditation or random moments where the unity of the entire universe is revealed to us as an absolute truth just through experience. But for almost everybody in our waking state throughout the day, it's not something that is apparent and it's not obvious. And as we go through our lives and do our work, the idea of potential, I think, is really important. There's a couple raw quotes that I think were relevant to this, in that it highlights the idea of potential and the role of potential in our lives. And Dawn is basically asking about the definition of intelligent infinity. And in the first quote, Ross says, there is unity. This unity is all that there is. This unity has a potential and kinetic. The potential is intelligent infinity. T Tapping this potential will yield work. The nature of this work is dependent upon the particular distortion of free will, which is, in turn, is the nature of the particular intelligent energy or kinetic focus of the potential of unity or that which is all. And so we are basically here in third density to do work, to get back to where all is one is not just a potential, and to realize, to do that, to get back to the Creator, I think it's important for us to realize the difference between the potential and the kinetic. As we are going through the kinetic and the complete unity, all is one, is the potential, but we have to do the work to get there. Sorry, there was another raw quote that it might confuse things a little bit.
Well, I thought that was excellent, by the way.
Thank you. It's in the same session, just a couple questions later. They're trying to explain the same topic. And at first it sounds a bit contradictory, but Ra goes on to explain. Ra says, there is no difference, potential or kinetic, in unity. The basic rhythms of intelligent infinity are totally without distortion of any kind. The rhythms are clothed in mystery, for they are being itself. From this undistorted unity, however, appears a potential in relation to intelligent energy. In this way, you may observe the term to be somewhat two-sided. One use of the term, that being as the undistorted unity, being without any kinetic or potential side. The other application of this term, which we use undifferentiatedly for lack of other term, in the sense of the vast potential tapped into by focuses of energy, we call intelligent energy. So I think in a lot of words, Ra is basically saying both all is one and potential and all is one, period.
Mm-hmm. It kind of leads to a paradox, which might be a good thing. Ra said that paradox is one of the signs of being on the spiritual path. Before there was a creation, the only type of service possible was service to self. And if you consider that each of us is learning something that helps the Creator to know itself, then the basic way the Creator learns itself is through service to self. However, in a manifested state, the positive polarity, the service to others polarity, seems to be the one that produces the most knowledge of the Creator and the service to others value. It's the path of that which is, as Ra said, but for the negative path of service to self, the path of that which is not, seems to separate by the holding of that position and that concept in the mind, seems to separate us. But when seen from the point of view of the Creator, service to self is the way it learns.
Right, right. I think the way that the path of that which is not manages to separate out love is they just skip the green ray chakra. They skip over the heart. They go from the I have trouble counting the rays. Is it the third ray? They skip from the third ray, yellow ray,
to the blue.
That's relationships, right to the blue, right to the intellect. And so for a service to self entity, it's all in the head. It can never be in the heart because there is no heart accepted as a reality. I skipped the one that pumps and beats, you know, in the flesh. There's no heart. That's all considered by the path of that which is not a false thing, an illusion that just spoils people and brings them down and limits them. And to them, the path of that which is not is the path that is free. Well, in the intellect, I suppose it feels freer than the heart because the heart does offer limitations. The heart offers the limitation of I want to serve, I want to love, and so they have to look at everybody as somebody to serve, somebody as a soul. And the path of that which is not looks at other people as can be used or those which are pawns.
Jim, did you have anything more to?
Well, that paradox to me just gives me the comfort of knowing that all is well, whatever happens in the manifested worlds of negative over positive and positive struggling against the negative forces, that it's all teaching the Creator, and it's the Creator learning about itself in the smaller version of ourselves as mind, body, spirit complexes, and in the larger version of the wholeness of the Creator who made all things. So all is well, whatever it looks like.
And you're saying that basically if it's all of service to self to the Creator, then it would necessarily be all of service to self to its created parts.
Right.
There's the paradox.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys are blowing my mind. It's interesting that all three of you addressed basically what is paradox, because that's the direction my own response is going to move into. And apologies in advance, because I didn't get sleep last night, so I had caffeine this morning.
You're flying.
Oh, yeah. Since the meditation retreat, I've only had it twice, and this being the second time, and I should stay away from it. So I'm going to try to counter my intensity of energy and bring myself back down. So this particular topic is my favorite. You could say it's at the center of my own path, and I think it's the central mystical question at the heart of the Law of One as well, that primal paradox between the many and the one, or separation and unity, etc. So I have to say about it, and I would like to start my own response by focusing on the twin categories of thought, of between what is and what is not. Ra begins the contact with the LL group in question number 7 of session 1. They say, in truth, there is no right or wrong. There is no polarity, for all will be, as you would say, reconciled at some point in your dance through the mind-body-spirit complex, which you amuse yourself by distorting in various ways at this time. This distortion is not in any case necessary. It is chosen by each of you as an alternative to understanding the complete unity of thought, which binds all things. You are not speaking of similar or somewhat like entities or things. You are everything, every being, every emotion, every event, every situation. You are unity. You are infinity. You are love, light, light, love. You are. This is the Law of One. So we begin with the category of what is. What is unity. What is infinity. What is oneness. Not what will eventually be or what will potentially be, because eventually implies time, but rather what is eternally right now. So no matter how real the separation seems, no matter what entity you are, no matter the density or the location or the particular layer of the dream, no matter even what octave you're experiencing, it is always infinity. It is always one, period. There is no other way. Not only is it always infinity, but you are always infinite. This, to me, is what the Law of One is ultimately all about, who and what you are. Now, to the other category of what is not. Things are not, according to my understanding, things are not in actuality separate. Things are not ultimately finite. There is not, in reality, manyness. It only appears that way. It only seems that way. This is why the word illusion is applied. And alternatively, this is why the word distortion is applied. So how does Ra address what is not? Firstly, recall the quote that I just read from Ra. Ra makes their first mention of what is not when they say, in truth, there is no right or wrong. There is no polarity. And then in session 4, question 20, Ra goes on to say, healing occurs when a mind-body-spirit complex realizes deep within itself the Law of One. That is, there is no disharmony, no imperfection, that all is complete and whole and perfect. So we have pretty clear statements about what is and what is not. But this is where it gets problematic for the third density seeker, because these two statements of two categories identifying what is and what is not seem to represent two completely contradictory truths. They represent an absolute paradox to our mental comprehension. And as I understand these things, this paradox will not be resolved in our minds. Infinity transcends any possible category of thought that we can create. We can think as clearly and, quote-unquote, accurately as words and concepts will allow, but it is only through going beyond identification with thought forms, through the discipline of meditation, that the paradox is understood, if I can use that word. It is only in the...
Grokked. The word is grokked.
Way better word, thank you. Mm. It's only in the silence and the stillness of the present moment where exists an awareness which simultaneously sees and embraces that paradox, which that embraces the paradox that you could describe thusly. A, no matter surface appearances, all things are infinite and one. Right here, right now, this is it. You are looking at infinity. You are infinity. Not some other place, not some other time, not when you finish eighth density, but right now, this is infinity. You're experiencing it. And B, there yet seems to be separation and manyness and distortion and imperfection, etc. There seems to be a future in which you will eventually become infinite. So these two seemingly opposite points of view are expressed when Ra says in session 55, question 1, the seeker seeks the one. The one is to be sought, as we have said, by the balanced and self-accepting self. And here's the key phrase. Aware both of its apparent distortions and its total perfection. Resting in this balanced awareness, the entity then opens the self to the universe, which it is. So right there, Ra addresses both those two present truths, apparent distortion, yet total perfection. And this is where I think we need to be careful, because some seekers hear that all is infinite, and they think that they can, and this is what Austin was getting at when he was talking about the work that needs to be done. Some seekers hear that all is infinite, and they think that they can negate or deny and or ignore their own work, their own lessons, and their own energetic material. And illusory though separation may be, the illusion, the idea of separation, has power. It absolutely demands and requires that we move through a process. We do our work in consciousness, and we walk our disciplined path in order to get to the other shore, as it were, in order to move through the gateway and merge into the infinite creator, realizing that we are already realized, that there never was doubt, that there never was confusion, that there never was illusion, that there never was separation, that there never was a gate to walk through. As one of my favorite short statements from Ramana Maharshi is, he says, illusion itself is illusory. But we have to work through that illusion to get to that point, to see and to realize that understanding. And I think I'll stop there.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. However, I do think that there is a certain distance that a person has to go in the bumper car ride that life is, bouncing off of other people and what they have to say and do to us, bouncing off of them with our reactions, boom, boom, boom. You watch people that are very dramatic and acting out, and it's very quick. You know, the bumper car ride goes very quickly, and everything bumps. And then there are other people that things don't tend to bump, and they may be closer to realizing that all is one. But they may still have a very keen perception of the bumper car ride. So I am at that place of having enormous sympathy for people who are struggling with this and all spiritual perceptions, for people who haven't found their feet completely or altogether. And I just want to help, you know. I have no idea how, but I do see the pain involved, the suffering involved in the feeling of it being a bumper car ride, and there is a lack of suffering in the realization of unity, and on the other hand, it takes a while for most people to get there, so they will suffer. I guess the problem of suffering doesn't come into this, though. This is just basically an intellectual question. Is all one, period, or is all one in potentiation? And you're saying, hey, look, the deeper truth and the truth that people see when they're with it is all is one. Forget it. The rest is just illusion. How true, how true, how true, but how hard to grasp and how hard to make your own.
I think, according to my own study, one who has awakened to that truth doesn't turn a blind eye to those still within the dream, those still dreaming the dream. Take the Buddha, for instance, if the story is accurate. Under the Bodhi tree, he becomes enlightened, moves through his temptations, and upon awakening from the dream, looks about himself and realizes that there's suffering everywhere. Life is suffering. And everybody wants happiness, but they don't know how to get it. So he doesn't just enter a cave and bliss out and exist in infinite being because all is one and there's no work to do. He instead orients his life to service and decides to speak to those still within the dream that and tell them that essentially that they are dreaming. He teaches suffering and the end to suffering and doesn't develop a cosmology like the Law of One offers, but gives a methodology for awakening from the dream and dedicates the remainder of his incarnation towards that end. So nothing in my own thinking implies indifference. I mean, that Ra says of the they say that there are fundamental teachings of all planes of existence, and they start by saying that all things are one, and they say in that unity lies love, in that unity lies light, in that unity lies joy. These are the fundamental teachings of all planes of existence. So that realization of oneness necessarily contains and includes love. I mean, that sort of entity who understands that there is no separation, is that heart chakra is fully alive and well and has empathy for those within the dream. But at the same time, he sees, and this is a metaphor I got from Ramana Maharshi, that awakened entity sees that the pain the suffering is an illusion, the pain is an illusion. They're just images on a screen. The fire in the movie being projected onto the screen doesn't burn the screen. What is real ultimately can't be threatened or hurt or impaired, etc. It's the images that are participating in the suffering. And again, this isn't a call to not have empathy for those within the dream, but to recognize the backdrop of infinity against which all that pain seems to be happening.
That satisfies me completely.
Just a couple thoughts that Gary brought to my head, in that you were talking about how the idea of a potential unity only comes into play when we introduce the aspect of time and time existing. And Ra actually says at one point, there is past, present, and future in third density. Responding to a question from Don about past communications from the Confederation where they said there is no past and no future. But Ra is pretty clearly saying that here in third density, you know, we experience past, present, and future. Obviously, it's there. And the idea that you said that the paradox will not be solved in our minds. And I actually read something last night that I really liked that is pretty relevant, that says, the universe does not contain paradox. Paradox exists only as a result of limited minds attempting to comprehend an unlimited universe. And I thought that was a really cool quote.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. Anybody have anything to further to add to that question?
Nope.
There's an Alan Watts quote I really wanted to find. Our next question comes from Andrew B. via email, and Andrew says, regarding the recent incident of the teen Alex Rybal of Pennsylvania inflicted great violence on his classmates and others like it at military bases. I suspect he was under the influence of a service-to-self entity. Was Alex's free will compromised? What can we learn about the mechanism of this violent loss of control?
Just to give background on Alex Rybal, he was about a month ago a teenager who brought a knife to his school and started attacking students. Apparently, there were no warning signs, no past history of mental illness. It was a shock to everybody in his life.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not familiar with the situation myself, and even if I had studied it, I don't think that we're in a position to determine whether or not there was a negative attachment, but that certainly is a possibility. And for the sake of discussion, assume that that was the case, that there was, he was under negative attachment. So Andrew asks, was Alex's free will compromised? I would presume so, but I would also presume so only through the faculty of his own free will was his free will compromised. His free will must have created some, in a case where somebody does have a demonic / negative attachment, that person must create some kind of opening through their own free will, would be my guess, on some level. And by opening through their own free will, I don't mean conscious opening, but through confusion they created that opening.
It may be confusion. It may be a kind of clarity that comes to those who rely completely on the intellect, and they're looking for more freedom than this all this silly love blather has to offer, and that in itself is a seeking for negative psychic greeting. So, or he could be seeking negative greeting. He could be seeking some kind of demonic attachment and be really happy that he got it. I mean, you just don't know what's in his mind. You have absolutely no idea. You know, I don't see how that question can be actually asked. Now, we can learn about the mechanism of how you can be greeted by an intellectual approach, that is, through channeling. It's important to a channel to know this. It's not necessarily important for others. It's important for a channel to know this so that he doesn't screw up. But the signs of negative greeting are any kind of ego attachment, any kind of desire to be more than he is, any kind of and then there are negative situations that are placed there by the questioner. If you're asking about the future, that's service to self. If you're asking about something specific, that can often be service to self, in that the person wants to know the answer to it, doesn't know the answer to it, and is absolutely relieved when he gets an answer to it and comes forth with some bunch of words that he's gotten that seem to make sense to him, but are, in fact, of negative greeting. And the way a person that's reading it can tell what's negative and what's not is if it makes you feel expansive, if it makes you feel up, if it makes you feel joyful, if it makes you feel free, wonderful, that kind of thing, it's probably positive for you. If the words seem to indicate gloom and doom, if they bring you down, probably has a good chance that it's negative service to self, simply because the positively oriented source will go to great lengths to look for something positive to say. So I don't think that really applies, though, to the specific Andrew B., because, and you know, Andrew B.'s question, because Andrew B.'s question has to do with a specific person, and we just don't know what's in his mind. And I don't think we can know what's in anybody's mind that has a violent loss of control. I don't think we can just assume that it's negative greeting. We might instead find any kind of reason that the psychologists have for what, you know, a term for what happens when people have a loss of control. I don't know what that term would be. Specialized lingo. Anybody?
No, I can't think of the term.
Psychotic fugue comes to mind.
That's one of them.
Jim, anything to offer?
The thought just came to my mind that his action of going to the school with a knife and stabbing people might be a reflection of the way he sees himself as being treated by others around him somehow throughout his upbringing. I mean, he hasn't been around very long, so I guess the last few years of his conscious life, he's perhaps had some feeling that he is being attacked.
Well, you know, I did. You know, if I were just going on the way people treated me in school, I was treated horribly by my peers. I was shunned, and people refused to be with me. People refused to sit at the same table with me. Absolutely refused. I mean, got up and left. Can we be clearer?
But you always had that sense of self that you were able to express yourself to in other ways. I mean, that didn't crush your world when somebody didn't want to eat with you.
It didn't. It just made me sad, you know. But I think in somebody else, you could take those things as being knife wounds.
Yeah. And if the person felt powerless or unable to deal with it, the expression then of using the knife might be an assertion of "I am powerful." I'm just thinking about also another thought popped in my mind, very personal, that I seem to learn compassion by having a lack of compassion for myself, and I get angry at myself from time to time because something doesn't go right. That nail gets bent instead of hammered in. The line doesn't get sawed correctly. So for a moment, I feel powerlessness. And then maybe if I just smash that hammer down on top of that nail and break the board too, for a moment, I feel power. But then, of course, I've got to clean up the mess. So
and that's where the learning comes in.
Yeah, that's where the learning comes in for a person who wants to do it in a conscious fashion without hurting anybody else. You know, you keep it to yourself. Perhaps he's, not strong enough to be able to figure out how to deal with being attacked or perceiving attack. This is just all supposition, you know, just trying to get into the mind of somebody who does that.
Mm-hmm.
And that might then be the opening that is made toward the negative entity who, I can't imagine a kid that young is on the qui vive enough to be able to consciously call negative entities, but by his behavior has invited who knows what as far as he's concerned, but maybe they are negative entities.
Kids are very open.
Get a little mileage out of the power they can exert over others through him.
Right.
Yeah, and if he did have that kind of wounding, if he did have that early trauma in his life, in this life, maybe even a past life, and saw related to the world in that way, the world is against me or hurting me or has caused me some kind of pain and I'm a victim. And he didn't consciously process that, but that was stuffed down in his subconscious so that on the surface he had pretty socially normal and acceptable behavior. But then for whatever reason, that cluster of emotion and pain and feeling came, just emerged or popped from beneath the subconscious and could and took him over.
And he did feel powerful for that small length of time. until the policeman caught him.
Yeah.
Or whoever it was caught him. I don't know whether it was another...
The school security guard.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think actually there's a student, teacher, and security
right.
guard. They all kind of helped to tackle him and bring him down.
And there's the possibility, too. I read an article a while back, and the article was focusing on how responsible is an individual for their actions and how that ties into the justice system, how we relate to individuals who have committed crimes. And there was this one particular individual who had led a healthy, normal life, and then one night he clicks, he gets in his car, drives X number of miles, and murders his in-laws.
Oh.
Went something like that, and it was in Canada, and it was determined medically that something went wrong in his brain. Something malfunctioned, I think I know what it was. There was a tumor that was growing in his brain, and that caused this particular heinous action that he otherwise would never have committed and was uncharacteristic of him. So not that I know what the cause of that tumor was. Perhaps that was also some function of free will. But I think there also exists the possibility of something just purely biological, purely physical happening that affects our behavior.
Well, like you said, from a past lifetime.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole thing being created so that in this lifetime he starts to realize he's got to pay.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And then it manifests as some kind of physical.
Then it comes to a head.
Distortion.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly a chance to look at it again while you're sitting in prison, moldering.
So he was put in prison?
No, he very likely will be. He would try it as an adult.
Okay.
It was just a month ago. They're still on trial, determining whether to charge him as a juvenile or an adult, and taking his mental health into account. The only thing I would add to what all has been said is there's been several possibilities mentioned about why he would do something like this, and I think there are many, many more possibilities, including or excluding influence from some exterior entity. But I think what we really need to come to terms with is that humans on their own without external influence are capable of great acts of violence, and we don't need prompting from external entities. And something like this is confusing when somebody just kind of snaps and we want to look for answers. And I don't think necessarily that automatically attributing service to self influence
mm-hmm.
from an exterior entity is the first place we should go to look for that.
Right. I think there is always the feeling, God, I wonder if this could happen to me. You know, that's the subtext of any time somebody is reacting to the news of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think we all have to have that thought, vagrant thought, somewhere in our head. This could happen to me, or could it happen to me, you know, something like that. And it's scary, and you want to find an answer so that it doesn't include you
mm-hmm.
under any circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like... Austin says there isn't one. There isn't one. There may be many, but there isn't one.
And if all is one, it has just happened to you.
Exactly. And
that's
we have to heal
point.
It, you know, in order to heal that other person, we have to heal it in ourselves. So we have to understand enough to heal it in ourselves, not enough to heal it in him. I mean, that's our job, I'm saying. If we notice that we are thinking about that subtext in anything but a vagrant way, if it really comes up and sticks, you know, that means we have some work to do. And that means healing ourselves. That means finding a piece of our shadow side that we haven't found yet, which is always so bad, so hard, so difficult, and so scary.
Because I think a lot of power resides in that shadow side.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yeah.
because it's unknown, and we give it power for one thing, but then I think it already has power too because it's part of ourselves, it's part of the Creator, you know. But and then the question becomes, well, what will happen with that power if it's loosed? You know, where will it go? What will it do?
Loosed upon humanity, yeah.
or upon yourself.
Or upon yourself.
What do I do with this?
Yeah, what Jim said reminds me of something Ra said about the dangerous use of the will.
Even subconsciously.
Yeah.
For the conscious seeker, yes.
Oh, come on, lawofone.info. Just typed in dangerous.
Well, I think Ra was mentioning that it's important to be aware of your thoughts and not necessarily control them, but to avoid the ones that are obviously not helpful or harmonious. Because even for one who is consciously seeking and has gotten some degree of power, even subconscious thoughts can have a reality and repercussions.
Yeah, because that the increased power that is being made available to you can be hijacked, so to speak, by those unknown, rejected, suppressed, unaccepted aspects of yourself. Because, I mean, they're alive. They have momentum. They have their own internal logic.
They do indeed. And a lot of times, it feels like a psychic attack. It looks like a psychic attack, and it's actually from your shadow side. It says, look at me. Pay attention to me. I need your help.
Mm-hmm.
And that's us. That's not from outer. That's just probably 9 out of 10 cases at least when somebody's going, I think I've been attacked. It's not somebody else. It's not outer. It's inner. It's in our personality, and it's in our shadow side. And that shadow side is something we do not want to face. We don't want to grapple with that. We want to push it away. No, that is not me. That could never be me. I've heard that reaction and when I have been talking publicly and somebody came up and said, well, what do you have to say about you know, if all is one, that means that somebody that's in jail for killing somebody is one. And how can that person be one with you? There's something in me that is the murderer. I just have to find it and heal it. And she says, well, there's nothing in me. And he sat back down, really dissatisfied with me. Did not feel I'd answered her question.
Yeah, I think you need a metaphysical background or some understanding, either firsthand experience of the underlying reality, spiritual reality, or at least some philosophy wherein you could see that you contain all that there is.
Yeah, in a sense. I don't remember that.
and speaking of the actions, what might prompt the shadow side to kind of take control of the body, as it were, and to commence a particular action? I think our society alone provides enough pressure and confusion and suffering to help trigger that shadow side and to help intensify it. So the
intensity is ratcheted up just by being a teenager. Everything's more.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then there's, of course, the transition
of
the teenage years.
Yeah.
And the increasing complexity of our society. But add to that, Stu, the coming of fourth density and what
right.
Ra described as the effect that those energies have upon the self that's not ready to face the self, that sort of self reverts to more orange ray activity, et cetera. And I have to wonder if that if the proximity of fourth density energy can cause people to kind of go berserk.
Well, I think it definitely has, at least in the case of those people who have separated from the United States and its democracy and feel that they have a better answer and feel that they can defend themselves. And it's all about defending the tribe, and they're very well armed, you know. And there are lots of places out west, especially, where there aren't as many people, and therefore there can be little nests of this and that people grow up who are of one mind, and they just really, you know, consider themselves superior and feel that everybody should be armed and everybody should be protecting their tribe. And to me, that's total second density thought. You know, that's what the great apes do. They defend the tribe, and they're well armed. You know, they if the highest technology they have is rocks, they collect rocks.
I think all four of us would act in a defensive manner if we perceived actual threat.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody threatened our physical body.
Well, I'd be terrified.
But there's a difference between that sort of defense, I think, and the mentality that sees a threat and is preparing for a threat, and exists in that sort of that state of fear and perpetuates fear, rather than learning to cultivate an attitude of fearlessness, regardless of what happens on the surface.
Yes.
So that takes us to 157. Carla, did you want to close with any thought?
I just want everybody to know that we love you all, and we hope that we are serving you as we intend to.
You've been listening to LL Researchers in the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions, Isis and Andrew B. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. Have a wonderful week, everybody. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we will talk with you then.
Oh, if you are, I'm on.
I land on an island coast, and only souls I see are ghosts. I run through a wooded aisle and chase the sunlight mile after mile. And I feel like I know this place, and a tree line breaks in the wide open space. I stare at a bright red sun, search all day and never find anyone. Planets turn and the ocean